As Scratch and Pike charged inside, the dimness of the barn made it hard for them to see at first. Scratch saw muzzle fire spurt toward them and snapped a shot in return. He didn't want to kill any of Steve North's men or the rancher himself, but he wasn't the sort of gent who could get shot at without shooting back.
Doggone it, I'm hit! You're like a damn bee sting.
Scratch looked over at the giant and saw Pike pawing at his upper left arm. There was a small bloodstain on the sleeve of his homespun shirt, but it didn't seem to be spreading very fast. He'd probably just been nicked by one of the bullets flying around.
Those bastards must be some of Bascom's waters. Get them, but don't kill them. We'll use them as hostages to make Bascom give up, the rustling son of a bitch.
The guns fell silent as several men rushed at Scratch and Pike. North didn't know it, but he had just played right into their hands. Scratch didn't care what the odds were. Based on what he had seen so far, in a rough-and-tumble brawl, his money was on Chesterfield Pike. Six men charged out of the shadows. A couple of them looked surprised and started to slow down as they caught sight of Pike. They might have turned to run, in spite of North's orders, but by then it was too late. Pike was among them, flailing right and left with his tree trunk arms and keg-like fists. One man turned a backflip. Pike hit him so hard. Another doubled over, stumbled backward, and collapsed. A third man clutched his chest after one of Pike's fists landed on his sternum. Yet another flew through the air, crashed into one of the thick posts that held up the hayloft, and bounced off it to land on his face. Scratch holstered his guns as the remaining two men leaped on Pike. One of them landed on Pike's back and looped both arms around the giant's thick neck in an attempt to strangle him. The other grabbed him around the knees and heaved, trying to upset his balance. Neither man got very far with those efforts. Pike reached up, got hold of the man on his back.
Damn it!
The last man gave up on trying to yank Pike's legs out from under him. He might as well have been struggling with a pair of redwoods. He let go and turned to run before Pike could swing around. Unfortunately for that hombre, he ran right into the hard right fist that Scratch had launched in a perfectly timed uppercut. The blow deposited him on the hard-packed dirt floor of the barn, just as senseless as the others in the bunch.
Son of a bitch!
The exclamation came from the man who had ordered that Scratch and Pike be captured, not killed. He found himself alone in the barn now, with all his men either stunned and moaning or knocked out cold. He stood about 10 feet away, staring at the carnage, a sharp-faced man in range clothes that didn't look like he actually worked in them, and a Stetson with a tightly curled brim. A white mustache bristled under his hawk-like nose.
By God, nobody treats my men like that!
His hand clawed at the revolver holstered on his hip. Before the gun could clear leather, the man found himself staring down the barrels of both of Scratch's Remingtons.
Let it slide back into the holster, amigo. Then unbuckle that gun belt and drop it.
Do you know who I am?
I don't really give a damn, but I got a hunch you're Steve North.
He's North, all right. I've seen him around town a time or two.
You're that fella Pike everybody's so scared of. Well, I'm not scared of you, mister. Nor of you. Whoever the hell you are.
Deputy Marshal Scratch Morton. That's who the hell I am.
That don't mean nothing to me. I heard there were some new lawmen in Whiskey Flats, but your jurisdiction ends at the edge of town, Mr. Deputy.
I got all the jurisdiction I need right here. Now, you're gonna go out there and call a ceasefire. Tell your boys to stop shooting. Be quick about it.
What if I don't? You plan to shoot me?
Nope. I'll just let Pike here reason with you.
Well, hold on now. Just hold on, Deputy. I've always been a law-abiding man. I'll do what I can to help you. Whether you got any real jurisdiction out here or not.
Well, now that's more like it. Now move.
If you really want to do something to bring law and order to these parts, you'll arrest that thieving bastard, Chet Bascom. Son of a gun's been rustling my stock for months now.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that once the shooting stops. Keep moving.
Shots still blasted from the house and from the Star Ranch cowboys who were scattered around the place. Defenders and attackers, each trying to take a toll on the other. The damage that Scratch and Pike had done to North's men had decreased the amount of gunfire from that side, but the battle still raged. Maybe not for much longer, though, Scratch thought, depending on how much luck Bo and Riley were having. A narrow creek ran close to the Rocking Bee Ranch House, and Bo and Riley used the cover of the trees that grew along its banks to shield their approach to Chet Bascom's headquarters. The attackers from the Star Ranch were concentrated on the far side of the big house, so Bo didn't figure there would be too many defenders watching in this direction. If Bascom was smart, though, he would have posted at least a few men on this side of the house, knowing that it was always possible North's men might try to make some sort of circling maneuver. Bo knew that he and Riley couldn't just waltz in. They dismounted while still in the cover of the trees and started toward the house on foot. The cook shack and smokehouse were on this side of the spread's headquarters, so those buildings furnished some cover too. Bo stopped at one of the rear corners of the cook shack and edged an eye past it to study the ground between there and the house. The Rocking Bee Ranch House was a two-story whitewashed frame structure with a sprawling look to it.
Couple of riflemen in second-story windows. If we make a run for the house, they'll spot us and probably gun us down, thinking that we're some of Norse men. That means we have to distract them somehow.
How do we do that?
Bo leaned back so that he could look up at the shack's roof, where a tin pipe stuck up from the stove below.
Smoke screen.
The shack had a window in the back wall. Bo slipped over to it and risked a look inside. He didn't see anybody. Chances were that the cook was inside the main house. He had probably fled there when the shooting started.
Come on.
Bo shoved the window up. He climbed inside the shack first, followed by Riley. The cook probably slept out here, which meant that there would be some bedding in the cubbyhole where he spent his nights. Bo intended to use some of that bedding to kindle a fire in the stove that would produce a lot of smoke. While he was doing that, Riley would have to climb onto the roof and use another blanket to direct the smoke toward the house, like an Indian sending up smoke signals. The stovepipe was on the back side of the roof, so it might not be too visible to those sentries on the second floor of the ranch house. On second thought, Bo decided, maybe he ought to be the one to climb up onto the roof. Riley was younger and spryer, but he might not be able to handle a blanket well enough to make the smoke do what it needed to do. Bo was taking a second to ponder that question when a Chinaman jumped out from behind a stack of crates and swung a hatchet at his head. Instinct was all that saved Bo from having that keen blade buried in his skull. His Colt was in his hand, so he jerked it up in self-defense. That was enough to deflect it so that the hatchet swept harmlessly past Bo's shoulder. The next second, Bo rapped him on the head with the Colt's barrel, stunning him. The hatchet fell from nerveless fingers as the man crumpled.
Good Lord, where'd that Chinaman come from?
He'd be Bascom's cook. This is his shack. I figured he'd hold up in the house for the rest of them, but I reckon I was wrong. Give me a hand, and we'll tie him up with his belt so he can't bother us while we're working.
It took them only a couple of minutes to truss up the cook where he couldn't move and tie a gag in his mouth to keep him quiet. Then they were ready to put Bo's plan into action. He explained to Riley what they were going to do and pulled the sheets and a couple of wadded-up blankets from the cook's bed in a tiny alcove. There was kindling in a box beside the stove, which was cold at the moment, as well as a small stack of firewood in the corner. Bo got a fire going without much trouble, opened the flue all the way, crammed one of the blankets into the stove, and closed the door.
Be ready to make a run for the house, soon as the smoke is thick enough.
Won't the guards realize that something's wrong and start shooting into the smoke?
Maybe, but we're gonna be moving fast. It'll just be blind luck if they hit us.
Blind luck can get you just as dead as good aim.
That's true. You're learning, Jake.
Yeah, you keep saying that, but I haven't learned how to keep you and Scratch from getting me into these messes, have I? I swear, you get shot at by Apaches in the morning and land smack dab in the middle of a range war in the afternoon.
Give me a hand.
Bo began clambering out through the window with the other blanket over his shoulder. He got his feet on the sill and stood up in the window, reaching up for the roof. When he got hold of it, Riley laced his hands together and gave him a boost onto the tar-papered slope. Staying low so that his head didn't stick up over the roof line, Bo climbed up to the stovepipe where thick gray smoke was beginning to well out. Bo whipped the blanket off his shoulder and opened it enough to spread it around the pipe. The blanket trapped the smoke, and when Bo judged that there was enough built up, he snapped the blanket open and waved it, sending the smoke toward the house. He did that again, and the wind helped, spreading the gray cloud across the open space between the cook shack and the house. Bo pulled the stunt for a third time, then judged that his and Riley's approach would be about as obscured as it was going to get. He dropped the blanket and swung down from the roof.
Go, Jake, head for the house.
The sentries had noticed the smoke, of course. Bo heard their yells of alarm. Then seconds later, rifles began to bark. None of the bullets came close enough for him to hear them whining past his head. Most of the smoke was higher than his head, so it didn't sting his nose and eyes too much, and Bo could see Riley running toward the house just ahead of him. They made the back porch almost at the same time, bounding up the stairs with guns drawn. Riley seemed to be getting caught up in the heat of battle again. Barely slowing down, he lifted a booted foot and kicked the door open. It slammed back against the wall inside the house. Shots slammed out, coming from the defenders who had run to the back of the house in response to the sentry's outcry. Riley might have been riddled by the flying lead if Bo hadn't grabbed his coat and jerked him off his feet. Both men sprawled on the floor just inside the door.
Hold your fire! We're friends! Hold your fire!
Don't shoot! That's Bo Creel!
Rawhide, is that you?
Everybody hold your fire, damn it! That's an order! What the Sam Hill are you two doing here? I got this situation under control!
Yeah, it looked like it when we rode up and saw all these fellas trying to kill each other. You had no business riding out here and trying to stop a range war all by yourself, Deputy.
Well, somebody had to do it. Nobody else was in the Marshal's office, and when Steve North came in and said he was going to ride out to the Rockin' Bee and settle the score with Bascom, what was I supposed to do?
Wait for orders, maybe? Instead of rushing off like some damn reckless hothead?
You're the Marshal.
And don't you forget it. Where's Bascom?
A stocky man with thinning hair and a white goatee stepped forward holding a Winchester.
I'm Chet Bascom. You be the new Marshal.
That's right. And I'm ordering you to have your men cease fire.
The shooting still continued from elsewhere in the house and from outside as well as the battle raged on, although at a less intense level now.
Damn it. If you really want to do your job, Marshal, you'll arrest Steve North for being the wide-looping coyote that he is.
North has lost stock, too. I told you that over and over while I was trying to get you to listen to reason, Mr. Bascom. If you and Mr. North would just talk to each other without getting mad, you'd see that somebody's trying to stir up trouble between you as well as line their pockets with the profits from those stolen cows.
North's just trying to throw everybody off his trail. He's guilty, I tell you. Guilty of sin.
Why not let the law decide that?
When the law keeps me from being robbed blind, then maybe I'll pay more attention to it.
You better pay attention now. Call off your men, Bascom. Let us get to the bottom of this.
You swear you won't let Steve North take you in with his lies?
We'll listen to both sides. All we want is to get at the truth, which I suspect is a lot different than either of you think.
Well, I suppose it wouldn't hurt anything to let you fellas have a try at stopping this damned rustling.
That's all I asked you to do, Mr. Bascom, and you wouldn't even hear of it. You and North both just pulled ahead, called each other names, and started shooting. Why is letting the law handle things such a good idea now?
Well, shoot, Rawhide. You're a girl, and I've known you ever since you were a little bitty thin, running around Whiskey Flats with your drawers drooping.
Why, you...
Well, we appreciate your cooperation, Mr. Bascom. Now, if we could put a stop to all the powder burning for a while...
Bascom nodded and headed for the front of the house.
I swear, sometimes I think I'd like to shoot every stubborn, addle-pated man on the face of the earth. And that includes practically the whole damn species.
Settle down, Rawhide. You couldn't expect Bascom and North to listen to you. You weren't even a deputy until today.
And those two old mossy horns have been building up to this for a long time. Chances are they were some of the first settlers in this part of the country. They're used to having things their own way, bowling right over anybody who tries to stop them. Fact of the matter is, they're not quite civilized yet. But give them time. They will be.
Hold your fire! Damn it! Hold your fire, I said!
As the guns fell silent, Bo realized that no more shots were coming from outside either.
Sounds like Scratch and Pike did their part, too.
Pike? You brought that loco galoot along with you?
Worse than that, the Marshal made him a deputy, too. Come on, let's see if we can get Bascom and North to talking again instead of trying to kill each other.
The tension in the air was so thick you could have whittled on it with a bowie knife, Bo thought, as the two veteran cattlemen confronted each other on the front porch of the ranch house. Bascom's men stood along the wall behind him, bristling with guns. Likewise, North's heavily armed crew was arrayed behind their boss, equally deadly. Between those two bunches wasn't a very safe place to be.
All right. You'll both get a chance to speak your pieces. North, you first. Why did you come into my office this morning and tell Deputy Abbott you were going to attack the Rocking Bee?
Because I'm tired of my stock being stolen. Not only that, but one of my punchers was shot last night by Bascom's varmints when they wide-looped another jag of cows.
My man never shot anybody who didn't have it coming. And they sure didn't shoot anybody on your ranch, North, because they got standing orders to steer clear of that hellhole. The puncher who got shot, is he gonna be all right?
Well, I think he'll pull through. You mean to say that none of your crew was on my range last night?
What about it, Bill? Any of the boys unaccounted for last night?
Nope. Everybody was right here except for Burke and Holmes up at the line shack, and those two wouldn't rustle anybody's stock, not even North's. Hell, I've known them both for nigh on to 20 years.
Is that good enough for you? You got my word and Bill's.
I never heard anybody say that Bill Cavalier wasn't an honest man. Anyway, there were a half a dozen hombres in that bunch that stole the cows and Plug Edwadi.
That don't explain how come I've been losing stock, too. I figure you're behind it.
That's a damn lie!
Hold on a minute. North, you believe Bascom when he says he didn't have anything to do with your cattle being stolen and your man being shot?
Well, I don't want to. I purely don't. But I've known the old bastard for so many years, I don't think he'd lie to me. Steal from me, yeah, if he thought he could get away with it, but not lie to my face.
Then you ought to be able to accept North's word for it. If he says that he and his men haven't been rustling your stock either, Bascom.
I never said he wouldn't lie to me.
Has he ever? Has Steve North ever lied to you?
Well, no. Not that I recollect.
Then for God's sake, are you both just too stubborn to admit that somebody's been playing you both for fools and rustling your cattle while you waste time blaming each other?
I told them the same blasted thing. They wouldn't even listen to me. They were too eager to start shooting at each other.
Well, that ain't all of it, Rawhide. This fella here looks like he's been around some and seen some things. And you're just...
A deputy? Don't make me take your badge away when you've been a deputy for less than a day.
I don't have a badge. Do what you want. I don't care anymore.
How about it, gents? Are you willing to call a truce and let the law get to the bottom of this rustling?
Well, I reckon I can hold off a few days.
So can I.
But if I lose any more cows...
That goes double for me, dammit.
All right, then. It's settled. Mr. North, why don't we start by you showing us where you lost those cattle last night? Maybe we can pick up the rustler's trail.
We tried to follow the tracks, but we lost them in the hills. What makes you think you can follow the trail when me and my boys couldn't?
Well, for one thing, we're from Texas, and everybody knows Texans are natural-born trackers.
They're natural-born something, all right.
You can say that again.
Say.
Let's get our horses and ride, if that's all right with you, Marshal.
Sure, let's go hunt down some rustlers. And when we get finished with that,
Riley caught himself, and Bo was glad for the unaccustomed show of discretion. He knew what Riley had been about to say. After they tracked down those rustlers, then maybe they could find out who was running guns to the Indians.
I don't see why I have to go back to Whiskey Flats.
Because there's no one tending to the marshal's office. I know we don't have any prisoners right now.
Only because you let this big varmint out, which I would have never done.
I helped Miss Rawhide. I showed the Marshal and Bo and Scratch how to find this place.
And stove up half a dozen or more of my men once you got here. Those boys may not be able to do a full day's work for a week. By all rights, I ought to get you as a hand until they're all back on their feet.
No, sir. I don't do no cowboying. My pa said that cowboys was off and unwholesome individuals, that he didn't want me growing up to be one of them.
Chesterfield, you ought to go back to town with Miss Rawhide. Technically, you're still under arrest, even though the marshal did appoint you as a temporary deputy.
If you're going up in them hills to look for rustlers, you'd best take me along. Nobody around here knows that country better than I do, and I've been roaming all over them since I was just a little sprout.
He's right, deputy. Pike hunts and traps for a living, and he knows those hills.
See? I told you.
That's actually a pretty good idea. If you want to keep on helping us, Chesterfield.
I do. Being a deputy is the most fun I had in a coon's age.
Let's go, then. Rawhide, we'll see you back in town. Hold down the fort while we're gone.
Big load of horse pucky.
The redhead rode off grumbling, heading for Whiskey Flats. Bo, Scratch, Riley, and Pike headed for the Star Ranch, accompanied by Steve North and the men who had come with him to attack the Rocking Bee. The ones who had tangled with Pike had regained consciousness and were able to ride, but they looked plenty the worse for wear. North's spread was deeper in the foothills of the mountains than the Rocking Bee, and so the terrain was rougher. The grass wasn't as good either, and Bo wondered if jealousy on North's part had contributed to the ill feelings between the two men. On the other hand, it was still good cattle country, and judging by the number and quality of the grazing stock they passed once they were on Star Range, North had done all right for himself. His ranch was probably the second most successful one in these parts. It was a two-hour ride from the Rocking Bee to the high pasture where 100 head of North's cattle had been grazing until the night before. Along the way, most of North's men veered off and headed for the ranch headquarters at North's orders, the rancher saying that after they had been bounced around by Pike like that, they wouldn't be worth anything in a fight anyway. Three of the star hands accompanied them, making the party number 8. When they reached the pasture, North pointed out the line shack where the puncher who had been shot, Teddy Arrington, normally stayed.
He was out checking on the cows because he heard a commotion. We get wolves around here from time to time, and that's what he thought it was. Some old lobo after a calf or something. But when he got out there, he saw riders pushing the herd toward that canyon over yonder. He knew he couldn't stand up to 6-1 odds and try to get turned around and go for help. But one of the bastards spotted him and opened fire. Teddy caught a slug but got away and made it back to the ranch house. Kid ain't but 18 years old.
They rode toward the canyon where the rustlers had taken the stolen stock.
Where does that go? Can't be a box canyon since some cows had to go somewhere.
It cuts through the ridge to some Malpais breaks on the other side. The ridge is the boundary line for my property. Nobody claims the breaks since they ain't really good for anything. Hell, it's such a maze over there that nobody could find his way through it.
I know my way through the breaks. Tramped over every foot of them. Many's the time.
And maybe you can follow the trail. That's where we lost it, a mile or two into those bad lands. To tell you the truth, I was just glad we were able to find our way back out without straying into that damn lava. Stuff will cut a horse's hooves to ribbon and leave a man afoot.
Bo and Scratch had seen the black Malpais before. Hardened lava left over from volcanic eruptions many, many years earlier, possibly before the dawn of recorded history. They knew that it was indeed treacherous and that the razor-sharp edges of the lava deposits were dangerous to man and horse alike and had to be avoided. The men rode into the canyon, which was about 100 yards wide in most places, with sheer walls that rose between 25 and 30 feet to the rim rock. They could plainly see the tracks of the stolen cattle on the dusty floor of the canyon.
Well, easy enough trail to follow.
Yeah, a Texan would think so.
It'll get harder later once we get into the Malpais, but I reckon I can find them cows.
I hope you're right, big boy.
It was late afternoon by the time the men reached the far end of the canyon and reined in. The breaks that lay beyond looked dark and forbidding in the shadows cast by the mountains.
It would be easier to follow the trail in the morning.
That would mean leaving Rawhide on her own back in Whiskey Flats overnight. I don't know if that's a good idea.
That girl's got a good head on her shoulders. She'll be all right.
I don't know. Maybe I'd better go back too. I couldn't get there by dark, but it wouldn't be too late.
Bo frowned. He didn't like the idea of Riley and Rawhide being alone together in town. On the other hand, he and Scratch wouldn't be around forever to look after Riley and help him maintain the masquerade. The day would come when they had to ride on and resume their wandering ways. So maybe it would be a good thing for Riley to go back to the settlement. Let him get started now, seeing what it would be like to be the Marshal of Whiskey Flats without his two deputies around.
Sounds like a good idea, Marshal. We can track these rustlers, can't we, Scratch?
Sure. Yeah, we'll handle this little chore, Marshal. Don't you worry none about us.
All right, settled then. Mr. North, since I'm new in these parts, how about sending one of your men with me to make sure I find the trail to Whiskey Flats all right?
I reckon I can do that. Max, you go with the Marshal as far as he needs you to.
Sure, boss. Tell you the truth, I wasn't much looking forward to riding into that hellhole tomorrow anyways.
I don't reckon none of us are, but it'll be worth it. We can find them damn wide loopers.
During the night, the wind blew through the pinnacles and spires of the breaks with an eerie, howling sound that made a shiver go through a man if he listened to it for too long. Because of that, the members of the group camped on the edge of the Badlands didn't sleep too well as they waited for morning. They didn't build a fire, and their supper had been a skimpy one because they didn't have many supplies with them. Pairs of men stood guard in turn, just in case the rustlers who used this route came along again. Bo and Scratch took the same shift on watch, and as they hunkered beside a boulder that blocked the chilly night wind, Scratch spoke in a low voice that only his trail partner could hear.
I hope it wasn't a mistake sending that boy back to Whiskey Flats by himself.
He'll do all right. He's got to start standing on his own 2 feet sometime.
You really think he'll do that? I figure he'll cut and run if any real trouble comes at him.
He hadn't so far. He handled himself all right during that shootout in town and at the Thompson Ranch.
That was pure luck.
I don't think so. I think there's a good man in there. I felt like that all along. It's just a matter of bringing the good man out.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Nor should have known better than to accuse Bascom of being behind the rustling. His trail is a long way from Rock and B.
Maybe so, but Bascom could still be involved. I don't think he is, mind you. But just because the rustlers came through the canyon doesn't clear Bascom.
Now hide and watch. You'll see if there's some bunch of scruffy owl hoots up in the hills who've been doing the wide looping all along.
Chances are that you're right. But if Pike can really follow the trail through the breaks like he says, maybe we can prove it.
Oh, we get mixed up in some of the damnedest messes, don't we?
We do for a fact.
When morning came, the men ate a quick cold breakfast and then hit the saddle. Pike led the way into the breaks on his mule with the rest of the group strung out behind him. The temperature climbed quickly as the sun rose, and by mid-morning it was sweltering in the haunted Badlands. The riders followed a twisting, turning course that never ran straight for more than 50 yards or so. That was because there was always some obstacle to avoid. A lava flow, a spiny ridge, a huge boulder. It must have been hard work taking those stolen cattle through here. In most places, the trail was so narrow that no more than two or three of the animals could have walked abreast. On the other hand, there was no place for them to spread out and scatter. Once they started through the breaks, they sort of had to keep going. All the rustlers had to do was prevent them from trying to turn back.
We've already come a lot farther in here than we got yesterday. I was getting so turned around, I was afraid we'd never find our way out. Then we'd die of thirst or starvation in here. Anyway, we couldn't see the tracks of those stolen cows anymore, so we didn't know if we were on the right trail or not. That big hombre must have eyes like a hawk.
Several times during the morning, Pike had paused, dismounted, and hunkered down to study the rocky ground before straightening and pointing to the sign he'd been looking for that told him which way the cattle had gone. Once Pike pointed out the tiny indications, Bo and Scratch could see them too. But even though they were both good trackers, they knew that they would have lost the trail without having Pike's almost supernatural abilities at their service.
What's on the other side of these breaks?
Hell if I know. We're well off my range now, and I never rode over there. Never had any reason to till now. From the looks of it, though, they may run right up to the foot of the mountains.
That looked possible to Bo, too, but he supposed they would find out when they got there. That happened around midday, when Pike led them around another flow of the Black Malpais and up a long slope. When they reached the crest, instead of the gray and brown and tan of the rocky Badlands through which they had been riding, the verdant green of a grassy hillside fell away before them. It dropped down into a pocket valley, thickly grassed, dotted with trees, and watered by a small stream that twisted through it. The pastures at one end of the valley were packed with grazing cattle. There had to be more than 1,000 head, Bo estimated.
Son of a bitch! So this is where they've been going.
And I'll lay you odds that if you check the brands on those cattle, you'll find just as many Rockin' Bee animals as you do Star. Like I said, they've been looting both ranches and counting on the fact that you and Bascom would blame each other rather than looking for the real thieves.
Well, I feel like a damn blasted fool. But I'll feel better once we've rode down there and cleaned out that rat's nest.
It won't be that easy. They probably got sentries out watching this approach.
A shot blasted out as if to confirm his words, and Chesterfield Pike's battered old hat leaped from his head as if slapped off by a giant hand. More shots continued to roar, shattering the midday stillness, and as a slug whipped past Bo's head, he realized where some of them were coming from.
They're behind us, too!
A dozen riders burst out of some trees down the slope and charged toward the group, guns blazing. Bo, Scratch, and the others were caught in a deadly crossfire. If they stayed where they were, they would be shot to pieces in a matter of minutes.
Fall back! Back into the brakes!
I don't like running from trouble. Neither do I, but this ain't running. It's what you call a strategic retreat. Ain't that right, Bo?
Come on!
Twisting in their saddles to fire behind them at the group giving chase, the men turned their horses and galloped back into the brakes. Pike, who had been in the lead, now brought up the rear. Since he was unarmed, he couldn't fight back. All he could do was lean forward over the neck of his mule to make himself a smaller target, but he was so big to start with that didn't help much. Bo spotted a puff of powder smoke from the corner of his eye and realized that one of the gunmen in the brakes was hidden behind a boulder on a ledge about 20 feet up a rock wall. He swung his Colt in that direction and squeezed off three fast shots, aiming not at the boulder or the narrow slice of bushwhacker he could see, but rather at the wall near the concealed rifleman. Those slugs bounced off, ricocheting wildly from the almost sheer rock, and Bo was rewarded by the sight of the man reeling out from behind the boulder, clutching his belly where a flying chunk of lead had struck him. That deformed ricochet had probably done even more damage than a regular bullet would have. The man pitched off the ledge and plummeted to the ground as Bo and the others flashed by. Even though Pike had had to lead them through the breaks, once Bo and Scratch had been over a trail once, they had no trouble backtracking along it. The Texans led the way now, keeping their horses moving at a near gallop as they weaved around the lava flows and the towering spires. One good thing about the twisting trail was that the pursuers had trouble getting a clear shot at them. Rocks were always in the way.
Those hombres keep chasing us! They can't afford to let us get away now that we know where this place is!
I know! I'm hoping we can turn the tables on them!
Since he and his companions were outnumbered, they couldn't make a straight-up head-on fight of it. Instead, they had to find some place where they could fort up and hold off the rustlers. Bo pulled his horse to the side and waved North and his men on past. Scratch did likewise. Chesterfield Pike was still bringing up the rear on his mule. Bo and Scratch fell in with him, one on either side of the giant.
Chesterfield, you know of any place around here where we could make a stand?
Pond Pike Rock, it ain't far.
Lead the way.
North, you and your men move over and let us pass.
In a moment, Pike was in the lead again, veering off from the trail they had followed through the breaks onto an even more narrow, twisting trace with black lava flows on either side. If a man fell off his horse and landed in the Malpais, the razor-sharp stuff might cut him up badly. Pike headed up a slope. Gravel rattled and flew under the mule's hoofs. They came to a jutting shoulder underneath a giant oblong rock with dozens of holes bored through it by water, wind, and time. It bore a slight resemblance to a hornpipe, and Bo imagined that when the wind blew through those holes, it produced a musical note. At the base of the rock was a cave-like overhang, partially shielded by a cluster of boulders. As soon as Bo saw them, he knew that was where Pike intended for them to make their stand against the rustlers.
Head for the rocks!
Bo reined in, holstered his Colt, and pulled the Winchester from its saddle sheath. Scratch brought his mount to a halt and drew his own rifle.
Oh, no, you don't. You ain't gonna stay here by yourself and slow down those horses.
I don't have time to argue with you.
North and the cowboys from the Star Ranch rode past them. Bo had spotted movement at the bottom of the slope and brought the Winchester to his shoulder and squeezed off a shot in one smooth motion. The bullet sent the sombrero flying from the head of the Mexican hardcase, who had been the first to start up the hill after them. The man jerked his horse around so quickly that its legs almost went out from under it. Bo and Scratch sent several more shots whistling down the slope to discourage anybody else from trying it right away, then whirled their horses and galloped toward the boulders at the base of Hornpipe Rock. Pike, North, and the others had reached them by now and were dismounting and pulling their rifles. They covered Bo and Scratch as the Texans galloped toward the shelter of the boulders. But since none of them fired, Bo figured the rustlers were hanging back now, trying to decide what to do next. They hauled back on the reins as they reached the boulders and dropped from the saddles almost before the horses had stopped moving. Carrying their rifles, the Texans ran back to kneel behind a couple of rocks and peer toward the spot where the trail reached the top of the slope.
I found us a good place, didn't I? You can pick them off when they get to the top of the trail. Now, they can't get to us without going through a bunch of lead, and they can't go around because of the Malpais on both sides of the trail. We're safe here.
Oh, yeah, safe as can be.
The bitter edge to Scratch's voice told Bo that his trail partner had realized the same thing he had. The rustlers couldn't get to them, but they couldn't get out either. They were trapped here just as surely as if iron bars stood in their way. Bo knelt behind the boulder and peered over the barrel of his Winchester at the top of the trail. He and Scratch and the others had been holed up at the base of Hornpipe Rock for about an hour, and during that time, the gang of rustlers had tried twice to rush them, only to be turned back both times by heavy fire from the defenders. Bo didn't think any of the rustlers had been killed, but a couple of them had been wounded before they withdrew. In the long run, that didn't matter. If the rustlers settled in for a siege, only one outcome was possible. The defenders didn't have much food or water, and their supply of ammunition wasn't unlimited. Eventually, hunger and thirst would force them to make a break for it, and then the rustlers would be waiting to gun them down. Scratch had removed his buckskin jacket and rolled up the sleeves of his shirt over his forearms.
Whew, it's getting mighty warm, ain't it?
You can say that again.
Bo laid down his rifle and chucked his long black coat. He left his vest and his string tie on, though. Some habits were hard to break.
I say we charge the sons of bitches. They can't get all of us.
I think you might be wrong there, Mr. North. They outnumber us quite a bit, and I'm sure that by now they found some pretty good cover, too. I think there's a good chance they'd kill us all before we got to the bottom of the trail.
Well, hell, we can't just squat here and fry.
The sun will get around behind Hornpipe Rock eventually. That'll give us some shade.
I know that look. You got some idea percolating in that brain of yours, don't you, Bo?
Maybe. Those holes go all the way through the rock, don't they, Chesterfield?
Most of them do, I reckon. Now, you can tell that by the way the sun's shining through them. See?
So, if a man could get up there, he might be able to crawl through one of the holes and get out the other side.
If a fella could sprout wings and fly up there, you mean? He sure as hell couldn't climb up that rock.
No, but see that little knob of rock? A man could dab a loop on that, and I think it would hold his weight while he climbed up.
Hell, nobody could rope that. Anyway, I reckon a lariat would slip right off once a fella put his weight on it.
Only one way to find out.
Yeah. One of you punchers loan me your lasso. This looks like a job for Texas.
The hell you say? Jack Brody there is the best roper in the whole blamed New Mexico territory. Ain't that right, Jack?
I swing a lasso pretty good.
Think you could catch that rock?
I reckon I could sure give it a try.
Brody went to his horse and got his rope from the saddle. He paid it out and formed a loop, then moved over so that he stood under the little knob that Bo had pointed out. Brody backed up a couple of steps to give himself a better angle, then lazily twirled the loop a couple of times before he cast it upward with a flick of his wrist. The rope landed on the knob, but slid off without catching. Brody brought in the slack and grinned.
Huh. Could be a mite challenging.
Then he twirled it and cast again. It took four throws before the loop landed exactly right. Brody pulled it tight around the rock and hauled hard on it.
Looks like it's gonna hold.
I didn't think it could be done. The fellow would still have to climb up there, though, and there ain't no place to brace his feet until he's a good 15 feet in the air. That part of it would have to be hand over hand, and that won't be easy.
I can do it.
Chesterfield, no offense, but you're a mighty big hombre. I don't know if that rope will hold you.
It'll hold a steer, won't it?
Dang right it will. It's a good rope.
Then it'll hold me.
But what about them holes? I ain't sure your shoulders will go through any of them.
I reckon they will. Might have to scrape a little skin off, but I can make it. Once I'm through, that rope's plenty long enough for me to haul you fellas up one by one.
Let's give it a try. If we can get out of here, maybe we can circle around and get a drop on those fellas.
Pike took hold of the rope. If any of them was strong enough to pull himself up with only his arms, it was Chesterfield Pike. Scratch stepped forward and made a stirrup with his hands.
Let's give him a hand, boys. Somebody pitch in here.
The men crowded around and lifted Pike as he hauled himself up hand over hand. Pretty soon he was too high for them to help anymore, though, so all the burden was on him. The muscles in his arms and shoulders bulged dramatically as he strained to lift his own great weight. Then he was high enough so that one of his flailing feet found the overhanging rock face. That eased the load on his arms somewhat. He got his other foot braced against the rock, and from there on it would be much easier. He could just walk up the face of Hornpipe Rock until he reached the lowest of the holes, which was only a couple of feet above the knob where the lasso was caught. It should have been simple enough. It would have been if guns hadn't begun to crack at that moment and bullets hadn't started slamming into the rock around him, stinging him with rock splinters and startling him so that his feet slipped. Pike began to fall as the rope burned through his clutching hands. Bo whirled around to see where the shots were coming from and spotted powder smoke spurting from a flat-topped rock spire that thrust up out of the Malpais about 150 yards away. Some of the rustlers must have climbed up there, he realized, so that they could take pot shots at the men forted up at the base of Hornpipe Rock. They had spotted Pike climbing the rope and targeted their shots at him. Pike didn't fall all the way to the ground. He stopped himself after he had dropped about 5 feet. Bullets still pelted the rock around him, but so far none of them had hit him.
Give him some cover. We gotta keep those varmints off Chesterfield's back.
Bo lifted his Winchester and drew a bead on the pinnacle the rustlers were shooting from and squeezed off a round, then cranked the rifle's lever and fired again. Scratch, Steve North, Jack Brody, and the other star cowboys joined in, pouring lead at the distant upthrust. Their shots must have come close enough to make the rustlers duck, because slugs stopped smacking into the rock face.
Climb, Chesterfield, climb!
Pike started hauling himself up the rope again as the men below continued their covering fire. He quickly regained the 5 feet he had lost and got his feet braced on the rock again. From there, he practically lunged upward and reached the knob where the lasso was caught. One of his arms swung higher, and his huge hand gripped the edge of the nearest natural tunnel in the rock.
It ain't gonna be big enough for him to get through.
It's got to be.
Pike lowered his head and began to wriggle into the hole. As Scratch had predicted, his shoulders were a little too wide for it. But he twisted and pushed his arms out in front of him and narrowed the span of his shoulders as much as he could. His fingers dug against the rock and pulled. When Bo and Scratch glanced up again, the upper half of Pike's body had disappeared into the hole.
Son of a gun, he might just make it after all.
The rustlers had started shooting again. Ricochets whined wickedly around the rocks. The Texans kept up their own deadly, accurate fire, along with North and his punchers. Suddenly, a man plummeted off the spire the rustlers had climbed.
Got one of the bastards!
What do you mean you got him? That was my shot knocked him off of there.
The hell it was!
Keep shooting. Chesterfield's still a sitting duck up there.
A moment later, though, he glanced up to see that Pike had vanished completely into the narrow tunnel, pulling up the rope after him. Several more minutes of fierce firing went by. Then, suddenly, the rope slithered back down, this time from the top of Hornpipe Rock.
Somebody grab hold! I'll pull you up!
Go ahead! Get out of here while the getting's good!
Go on, Bo. I'll see you up top.
All right. You come next, though.
Right behind you, pard.
Bo ran over to the rope and grabbed it. He wound it around his waist once, and then got a good grip on it with his right hand. His left still held the Winchester, which he figured he would need once he was on top of the rock. He gave the rope a tug.
All the way, Chesterfield!
The sensation was a little disorienting and not very pleasant as Bo rose into the air and the ground fell away under his feet. Pike's enormous strength allowed him to lift Bo fairly quickly. A bullet whipped past the Texan's head. He almost banged into the overhang because he reached it faster than he thought he would. He got a foot up and fended it off, then used both feet to practically run up the rock face as Pike continued to lift him. Then he was at the top, and Pike reached out to haul him to safety. Bo fell forward and rolled a short distance down the sloping formation before he caught himself. Then he scrambled back up, stretched out on his belly, and thrust the Winchester's barrel over the crest. Just as he had hoped, from there he had a good vantage point from which to fire down at the distant rustlers. Judging wind and elevation with an expert sense developed over the long years of danger and adventure, Bo opened up, cranking off 4 fast shots. He saw the rustlers diving for cover behind the boulders that dotted the flat top of the spire.
Toss that rope back down there, Chesterfield. I'll cover you while you're hauling Scratch up here.
Pike nodded and threw the end of the rope down to the waiting men.
Grab hold, Deputy Morton!
A moment later, he began to haul away. Bo edged forward so that he could see down the rock face as he continued to fire. He glanced along the rope and saw Scratch rising toward him as Pike pulled it hand over hand. Scratch was about halfway up the rock face when pure bad luck took a hand in the game. One of the bullets fired from that distant spire found the taut rope, slicing it cleanly about a foot above Scratch's head, and he started to fall.
Scratch!
Despite his age, Scratch had the reflexes of a much younger man. Pike had lifted him high enough so that some of the tunnels that gave the rock its name were within reach. He dropped his Winchester and lunged for the nearest one, catching the edge with both hands and stopping his fall. Scratch's weight hit his arms and shoulders, but he hung on for dear life. The rope that was around his waist slithered loose and fell the rest of the way to the ground.
Hang on! I'll lower this part of the rope to you, Deputy!
That was Scratch's only chance, Bo knew. He thumbed fresh cartridges into the Winchester and opened fire again, covering Pike as the big man slid as far forward on the rock as he could without sliding right off it. He found a handhold with his left hand and clung to it tightly as he extended his right arm and dangled the part of the lariat he still held toward Scratch.
Grab on!
Down below, Scratch gritted his teeth as he tried to pull himself up far enough to grasp the end of the rope.
Damn it, Chesterfield! If I do, I'm liable to pull you off! There's no use of both of us getting killed!
No! I can do it! Grab the rope!
Go ahead, Scratch. If Chesterfield starts to slip, I'll grab hold of him.
Scratch gathered his strength, pulled himself up as much as he could, and let go with his right hand to make a grab for the rope. He got it, twisting it around his wrist a couple of times. Then he let go of the rock with his other hand and used it to grab the rope too, as quickly as he could so that his entire weight wouldn't be on his wrist any longer than it had to be. Up above, Bo watched anxiously as the fingers on Pike's hand that was clinging to the rock slipped a little. Then Pike shifted, braced his feet, and was able to use both arms to lift Scratch. Bo wanted desperately to go to his aid, but he knew that the best way he could help right now was to continue peppering the rustlers with lead so they couldn't concentrate their fire on the drama playing out on the rock face. Somehow, Scratch's cream-colored Stetson had stayed on his head despite all the banging around. It rose into view, then his head and shoulders, and then Pike reached out, grabbed hold of Scratch's arm, and pulled the Texan to safety. Both of them rolled down the slope where the rustler's bullets couldn't reach them. Bo slid down to join them.
You all right?
Yeah. Wrist still works good enough to shoot a gun anyway. I banged against a rock pretty hard, but I ain't worried about a few bruises. How about you, Chesterfield?
Let me catch my breath.
Bo picked up the rope and looked at the end of it where the bullet had sliced through it.
That was a mighty lucky shot. Or unlucky, depending on how you look at it. Need a piece of rope is long enough now to reach from up here to down there.
Yeah, North and his boys are stuck.
North, can you hear me?
I hear you, Creel. You hombres all right up there?
Fine, but we got a problem.
You mean we've got a problem? We're still stuck here.
I'm afraid so. Unless you got another rope long enough to reach up here.
Let me check. Nope, Jack's lariat was the longest one we had. You fellas go on and get the hell out of here. We'll keep those damn rustlers occupied.
We're not gonna abandon you, North. We'll find some way of pulling you out of there.
Forget it. Just get back to Whiskey Flats and tell the marshal about finding those rustlers' hideout. Clean up that rat's nest, boys. That'll square accounts for us.
If we leave those fellas here for those bastards to kill, it's gonna stick in my craw from now on.
Mine too. That's why we're not gonna do it. North, don't give up. Save your ammunition as much as you can. And make your food and water last. We'll turn the tables on these varmints somehow.
Damn it, Creel!
So long! We'll see you later!
They were up pretty high here. High enough to look down and see the lava flows snaking through the breaks.
Can you get us down from here, Chesterfield?
I reckon. You gotta understand, though, that I never been up in this particular place before. I only seen Horton pop the rock from down below. But I reckon I can find a trail for us.
Trail fit for a damn mountain goat, more than likely.
I've been accused of smelling like a goat a time or two in my life. Reckon now it's time to see whether or not I can climb like one.